Holla! Hello everyone, Marvin B here, bringing you another exciting episode of Podnuts Pro. This is show number 95, and I am joined by our good friend, Matt Rainey. Matt, how are you doing today?
Just great. I'm VPN'd out. Been setting up VPNs everywhere like crazy.
Are you doing the secure SSL VPN, or...
I went with the insecure VPNs. No. yes, do use the SSL VPN through the WatchGuard.
All right.
We've been having a lot of people get attacked through RDP attacks, so every day it seems like I'm setting up companies to connect through VPN.
Mm. I will be doing some of that shortly. We have a law firm that will be going entirely terminal server farm. So we will be redoing all of their connections so that even while they're inside the office, they'll be using a terminal server, and then we'll have it set up to where the attorneys go home or they switch offices, that they'll be able to connect to their proper terminal server farm. And it'll be interesting because we got to do the secure tunnels when they're on-premise. And then, of course, the SSL when they're off-premise. So
that sounds fun.
Yeah.
Sounds like some training for those lawyers.
Yeah, training for us on how to deal with them, too. So, folks, if you've noticed, there is not a third M tonight, just the regular M&M. Martin Obando is out again working hard. I don't know if he is the hardest working man in IT, but...
He's a busy Oregonian.
He is a busy man. So, all right. So, Matt, let's get right into some tech here. And I know that you've got some stuff you want to get rolling with on this fine jelly-packed version of Podnuts Pro.
Yes, full of preservatives. So, a couple quick things. And I think I've mentioned this a long time ago, but I'm going to mention it again because I ran across it again yesterday. Get a call from a client that they come in the morning and all their desktop shortcuts have been deleted.
Oh.
Everything that's on the desktop that's not a shortcut is still there, but all the shortcuts have been deleted. Shortcuts that point to network locations, to be exact, when I look into it. And in the past, I found the solution, so I'm going to share it again because... And this is on Windows 7, I've found. I don't think I've seen it anywhere else. But basically, there is a scheduled task that's running. If you go to Task Scheduler, and you drill down into Microsoft, then Windows, then Diagnosis, there is a task in there that's scheduled to run. And the description of the task is, the Windows scheduled maintenance task performs periodic maintenance of the computer system by fixing problems automatically or reporting them through the Action Center. Now, the problem it thinks it's fixing is, let's say you have a shortcut on the desktop and it points to a folder and you delete that folder. If you click on the shortcut, what happens? It says, hey, this shortcut's not valid. Do you want me to delete it? So this task, for some reason, thinks that the shortcuts are not valid, so it deletes all of them. And I think it's related to the network location awareness service, how you know it always messes up and says you're not on the internet when you are.
Right.
And it gives you the wrong location. I think it's related to that. So anyway, disable that scheduled task. It usually runs once a week, and it's usually running Sunday morning, so usually on Monday morning when they come in. But I've seen it scheduled different times, Wednesday morning. A lot of times it's scheduled Sunday morning. Check that task, and that thing can be annoying. And one company, I don't know why, but all of them had it. And, of course, they can't tell me if the network location said the wrong location. They didn't say they had any other symptoms, but I've seen this over and over again. And the fix is disable that task, and their desktop icons will be safe.
You know, there are a lot of stuff in there, if you look at the Windows schedule task, that I'm sure that, and there could be a college course on Task Scheduler alone, just going through all the things in there. And that sounded like a fun fix.
Well, luckily I had known the fix from years ago, but to find it initially, of course, the first thing is, yeah, right, your icons delete themselves. Of course they do. Yeah. You know, you go through the thing where you don't really believe them because that doesn't happen. And then when you get it reported over and over again, notice I didn't say complaining. I get it reported over
and
over
again. That's right, yeah. Users don't complain, they report.
That's correct. So I looked into it, and that's I found it years ago. And luckily, I got the call was his desktop was
gone,
messed
gone.
Up when he logs in.
Oh.
It was gone. And so I originally thought, okay, well, then he's loading a temporary profile.
Which is very common in Windows 7.
Very common in Windows 7. So the quick way for me to check that is open up Windows Explorer %temp%, right? And if the profile path is temp, then he's got a temp profile. But that wasn't the case. And then talking to him, it says, no, it's just my shortcuts that I created are all gone. And then light bulb, I know what the fix is. Thank you for my semi-good memory from years ago.
All right. And the temp profile issue, I used to think that was only a domain issue. Yet I have recently seen that on standalone desktops, either after a big old malware infection or whatever. So I've had to clean that up on the desktops. Although I found it to be a little bit tougher sometimes where you go in and do the registry fix, come back up, and it still creates a temp file. And of course, you know, it's not the same temp file. There could be temp01, temp020, temp021. But the last fix I had to do just yesterday on a standalone was basically do a backup of the user profile, delete it, create it, and restore the profile.
Now, is this Windows 7 or Windows 8?
It actually, it was Windows, I think it was even Windows 10.
Windows 10. So you're deleting the registry key, right?
Yes. Well, not deleting, because, well, I did delete it eventually, because in, you know, on the domain, usually you can just go in and delete the BAK, the backup of it, and then, you know, usually that fixes it. And then if that doesn't work, then you delete the registry and hopefully it'll just rebuild. But for some reason, this one did not rebuild.
You know what I used to see is instead of delete the temp profile, but I used to be able to, and it works sometimes, delete all the temp files in the main, in the good profile. And then reboot, and then it would load. The main profile would load. So that's worked sometimes.
So like a system cleanup, get rid of all the system temp files, the user temp files.
Yeah, but from the server, I would just go computer, you know, /computer/$, go to their profile, delete all the temp stuff, and then reboot, and it would load. It didn't work all the time, but it did work sometimes.
All right there. Folks, a few different tips for the same problem. That's what we do here. So on the note of your user having the desktop disappear, I had a user, an actual business call, and it started calling last week saying that their website was gone, and could I help them find it? and of course, you know, the first question is, well, where did you last look for it? But
where did you see it last?
So this was a customer that we had actually helped them a year ago move their entire internet service web hosting away from a service provider, and their internet was moving to Comcast, but I told them, look, don't let Comcast host your site. And I tried to get them to go to Network Solutions, but they wanted to go to GoDaddy. Yeah. So I was like, okay. So we moved everything over to GoDaddy, but just like last week, or was it 2 weeks ago, where I had the part-time web guy, this was another situation where this was even less of a part-time web guy. This was somebody's dad at the business who just put together a website for them. And one of the tasks that I left for them to do was after we moved everything back over to GoDaddy, I did all of the DNS stuff for them, got their mail services up because we managed their on-premise web server. We left the A record pointing to their old service provider until they could set up an actual hosting package. And I specifically left them instructions that they have to get the hosting package up and move the website over to the GoDaddy. And what do you think that happened with that?
I'm sure they messed it up.
They didn't even do it.
Oh, well.
So apparently the old service provider just finally got to the point where they said, okay, we're done with you. Click. And down with the site. So had to call the.
Did they have it backed up or anything?
They're checking on it because she couldn't get a hold of her dad. I don't know how. That was the instruction. Is first of all, I said, first thing you got to do is get in touch with GoDaddy, get yourself a hosting package so there's a place to put the website. And then secondly, get your dad to grab his backup, load it up. And if he doesn't have a backup, you're going to have to call the previous service provider, see if for some reason they'll, you know, graciously either put your site back up or give you a backup or something along those lines. So
backup? Why do you need a backup? It's on the cloud already.
That's right. Well, you know, you can go to those cachedweb.com pages and just pull it down that way, right?
That's one thing people forget a lot of is to back up their website. A lot of hosts don't back up your site. So if it gets hosed for some reason, you don't have a back. Unless you're backing it up, but there are add-on services that do back it up. Most of the hosting services will back it up if you pay them to back
right.
it up. But you have to set that up in advance. Yeah, so it wasn't missing. They knew you tracked it down.
Yeah, I knew exactly where it was. It's cloaked.
It's on the dark web.
Yep. All right. So what else you got?
So let me see if you've run into this problem before. I'm going to describe a problem. And maybe you don't even experience this. Most of our clients, we're doing drive mappings. They're on domains. We're doing drive mappings through Groupology.
Okay.
The old way is the login scripts. The better way for the past 10 years or more is doing it through Groupology.
Right. We do both. Ugh. I know. Sorry.
Okay. That's another topic.
bad network administrator.
Bad. Okay. So I get calls once in a while from clients who say my drives are not mapping when I log in. Okay.
So, ladies and gentlemen, if you just heard that, that is what you call live podcasting.
That was the watchdog, which is what people call watch guards a lot. Okay. So, you reboot, because a lot of times I don't believe them, and it's always a good policy to reboot anyway.
Yes.
Reboot, no drives mapped. Okay. From troubleshooting, I'm going to give you the fix. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. Basically, what's happening is WMI is not open in the firewall on that computer. So it can't check Groupology. So there's a big long command you have to type. If you have a dashboard with remote background, you can type it in there. If not, you can open a command prompt on the computer and type it. Basically, you're allowing WMI, a new rule in the firewall to allow WMI. And that fixes it. Because if you do GP update before you do this, you're going to get an error about how it can contact the server. And it can't apply Groupology, basically. You run this command, reboot, and the drives come back. You run GP update, and you get the right result, which you should get, not an error saying I can't pull down Groupology. That'll be in the show note because it's too long to type here or to say here. But if you have Groupology not being applied, it doesn't hurt to run this command because it should be open anyway, right? Run the command. It's not going to break anything. If you type it incorrectly, it's never broken anything for me, but it has fixed quite a few people who say that certain Groupology aren't being applied to them. For me, it's the main one that's most recognizable for users that report it is the drives aren't available. So
here's my question. Is this, for instance, somebody that just started on a new computer, or was this something where they were working and then stopped working?
Working and stopped working. I had to do this a couple days ago for someone. They had been there for a long time. I don't know if something, an update did something. I don't know what causes it. I've never really looked at I was trying to fix it. I don't know what causes it, but it's people who've been working. They've been having the Groupology applied, and they can see the drives, and then one day they can't.
I'm just thinking because I know I've got a couple of places where anytime a tech can't do something, one of the first things that they call me or email and ask is, did you make a change in the firewall?
Because that never breaks up.
Yeah. And I'm like, why would I have time to every day go in and make a change on your firewall?
What is today? Wednesday? Yes.
So I was just wondering, because that does seem odd that if it was working for a while and then just stop working.
I don't know if a program, you know, sometimes you saw the program that says, hey, you want me to adjust your firewall to allow this program, and it messed up and it did something. But
QuickBooks does that all the time.
Yeah. And there's a lot, you know what, a lot of these companies that have this use QuickBooks. If not all of them, I have to go back and think about that. But a lot of them I know use QuickBooks. So this was a common thing. And actually, I think we might have got this fix. I think we thought originally it might have been a dashboard issue, because we noted it got reported after we put the agent on a lot of computers.
Right.
So we were chasing the wrong thing. It wasn't, well, unless the agent did something to the computer. But it wasn't an agent issue. It was this. And I think that the Logic Now support is who pointed this in this direction. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good old QuickBooks. I had to deal with that today. Actually, it was the same customer that lost their website.
Did their dad install QuickBooks?
Yeah. I have no idea who updated their QuickBooks, but it was funny because they actually have three company files with I think it's QuickBooks Enterprise version, so they've got the multi-user, I don't know, the five users or whatever it is. So on one company, the one girl couldn't get in because, in their mind, the firewall broke. So I remoted in and basically found out that the two of the companies were working just fine, and they were running properly from the server, which was the host computer. But the third company, the accounting girl, for some reason became the host. Mm-hmm. Yep. And any time that they tried to move it back to the server and stop hosting it on the local workstation, they get that little H202 error. And what happened was she did the alternative setup and made herself the host and screwed that up. So
right.
That was a fun little fix.
They like doing that. It really should default to, I'm going to be using QuickBooks on this computer only and not hosting data, is what it should default to.
Right.
But of course, if they pick it, what can you do? They should say, are you sure? Yes. And then, are you really sure? Yes. Did you check with the IT guy?
That could be on the list that we talked about.
Because that happens all the time. We see that all the time, too. When they just call us all of a sudden, and we find out that they're now hosting. Like, what did you do? Oh, yeah, I upgraded QuickBooks. You should lead with that. I updated QuickBooks. Now we can't do multi-user.
Yeah.
Not just all of a sudden I can't do multi-user.
Did you do something on our server?
Clients ask me that all the time. Why would I just do something? Somebody asked me that the other day. Maybe it was today. Maybe it was this person I'm going to talk about next. Did I change something? Well, no. Did you get a bill?
Well, the best is when you just walk into a site and they're like, what'd you do? I'm like,
I filled the parking spot.
Said, you saw me walk in the door. What could I have done? I don't have those kind of powers.
Yeah. If I change something, you're going to get a bill. So did you get a bill? No. Then.
But you know what it is.
You change anything.
You know what it is, though, is they just assume that we're sitting in our offices with the ability to just, you know, do whatever we want, whenever we want. And so anytime there's a little, you know, what is it? My internet's broken. Are you doing something on our server?
Yeah.
No, I'm in the car having lunch.
Well, what are you eating? Because that might interfere with
that's
our
right.
server.
All right, well, a little lightheartedness there. Do you want to go ahead and talk about your customer that asked you what you did?
Right, so they forward an email, and the email basically says, this person can't accept your mail, and they actually offer a pretty good reason in the bounce back message saying, so they both have Office 365, sender and receiver. The bounce back says, because of you have two SPF records, we can't accept your mail. It's pretty clear. I mean, it had a whole big explanation. It was very clear why it wasn't being accepted. It wasn't one of these generic messages, which I really appreciated. So I go into their DNS, and sure enough, they, for some reason, have two SPF records. Now, it's an easy fix. Delete the old one. They migrated to Office 365 recently, so there was an SPF record created for Office 365, but it wasn't added to the existing one, and the old one wasn't deleted. So I didn't know, and I've never heard that if you had more than two SPF records, it might bounce, but you don't need to because you can just add the same information to one. So anyway, of course, he said, I don't know what y'all changed, but now this guy can't send mail to this guy. And they've been Office 365 for a good 6 months. So I don't know if it's something that Office 365 just changed, that they're not going to accept mail if you have multiple SPF records, but all of a sudden they couldn't send mail. So delete the SPF record. Now, a link to check this, MX Toolbox has a great SPF checker. You type in, there's a section on there that says something about SPF. You type the domain name in there. And it's going to tell you if your SPF record is correct or not, or if they find problems. And I put this domain name in that, ran the check, and it told me the same thing. You have two SPF records. Some people might not like this. Doesn't bother me, but apparently it bothers Office 365. So anyway, delete that. It should be good. And it's important to understand SPF records, right? Just like understanding DNS, you need to understand SPF records and why you need them and what they should be. And I'll put a link in the show note for the MX Toolbox SPF checker. But if you need to create an SPF record, I'll put a link, spfwizard.net. I like that site. You put in everybody who's supposed to send mail for your domain, and it's going to spit out the SPF record. You put that in DNS as a text, and you've got your SPF record. So,
all right.
And, of course, the client wanted me to explain what an SPF record is. It's always fun to explain it to the client who really has no clue, even when you explain it. Right?
Yep.
I told them, basically, the SPF record tells everyone on the internet where mail from your domain should be coming from. So if Bob over there is spoofing your email address, it's not going to come from the authorized place.
Right.
So it's going to think it's spam. So, and he still doesn't understand. Well, what's DNS? Can the guy explain DNS? And you go, in the end, I just said, it's a list of who can send mail for your email. And he didn't understand, but he stopped asking for an explanation. Which is good for me.
Yeah, the goal is not for them to understand. The goal is to get them to stop asking questions.
Right. Well, you've got this. Yeah, I need to come up with some. I don't know if I should make it more complicated or more easy, because either way, it's probably not going to work.
Yeah. And just so that everybody knows, on the MX Toolbox, even if you don't have an account there, if you just go to mxtoolbox.com, on the little header board there, there's a section that says More. And when you click on that, you have a smorgasbord. Of tools that you can use to, check your MX records, blacklist, who is, DNS, SPF, all of that stuff. So, very good resource. And SPF Wizard is good as well.
Have you used SPF Wizard? Do you create SPF records for
yourself? Yes, I do. It's getting fewer and fewer, but I do.
Well, even Office 365, if you're doing DNS, if Microsoft's not doing your DNS... You need to be creative for all those as well, right?
Yeah.
Even for domains that don't host email, should have SPF records, and they should just be blank. Basically meaning no email from someone should come from this domain, because some domains don't have email,
right.
But yet they can still be, somebody can still spoof an email address from that domain.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a point in time where every mail server is going to get to the point where, they'll start blocking mail if you don't have an SPF record, if you don't have proper TXT records, all of that stuff.
And they should, because that would really cut down on spam. I mean, if you can create a DNS record for an MX record, just create the SPF record while you're there. It's not asking much more, right? And it would really cut down on spam.
Right. All right. Let's see. Let me do this. I'm going to... So I had one of my best jobs... in the last week was an emergency call that started out with, we can't print out a report so that we can bill our client, and we've got to get this done right away. So I happen to be in my office, and I log in, and it's a billing program that, for some reason, something isn't working in the billing program. I really can't help with that. So I refer them to their software vendor who connects, and while she is connected remotely, they lose connection. Just no more remote connection. And of course, the internet broke. And I say, well, I can see all of your stuff. I can connect to your server. Is anybody else not working? Oh, well, they're all working. I said, well, the internet's not broke. And even if your office wasn't working, the internet's too big to fail. So the internet's not broke. But basically what ended up happening is I had to run out there very first thing. I had to cancel and move an appointment back, rush charge to go out. And guess what I found?
Somebody unplugged something.
Not that they unplugged, but that was very close. They have a voice over IP system, so the cable goes from the wall to the phone, from the phone to the computer. I was going looking at the computer, that looked fine, looked at the cable, took my Fluke tester, plugged it in, couldn't get anything, went to the phone. As I'm picking up the phone, the cable falls out. Just fell out.
It wasn't plugged in
good. So,
or the clip broke.
No, it was weird because the clip was on it, but if you tried to push it in, it did not catch. And I have no idea how they just never noticed this before. They've been in that space for 3 years. It is an office that's not really used that much, but apparently nobody had ever moved the phone.
So she nudged the phone.
So she did the phone. So we swapped out a cable, got that up, and that was my best call in the last week.
So touching the phone broke the internet. That's what I'm hearing.
And it was funny because while I'm, there and I've got my, I got my bag of Fluke tools, and they're just like, wow, that bag really cost us a lot of money, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, cost me a lot of money, so it's costing you a lot of money.
That and your I need it right now service.
Yes. So that was. Wasn't a full cable repair, but it was just a joy. And of course, I did have I had two jobs where I had to have the customer call back their cable guy, because the cable guy in the one place ran brand new cable. We're talking 22 cable runs, and I went to go set up a workstation, and jack didn't work, and I decided to go ahead and test the rest of the cables. 4 out of 22 cable jacks not working. That's not. Yeah, well, that's good. That's good in baseball, right? But
well, but he got 18 right.
Yeah, I guess that's a passing grade, right? That's like a B plus or B minus.
Pretty good. So was it the just punch down wrong, or what was the problem?
Some of them were, it's weird, because two of them, I think, were just not punched down correctly on the panel, because when I did the test, basically, it showed the cable broke, or short right at the panel. The one cable, though, actually, it's funny, because on my tester, it tells me that actually, all four cables were broken on one. It showed open at 142.6 feet, open at 142.6, open at 2.6, open at 142.6. So, I don't, it sounds like it was just a bad cable break somewhere. But the good thing was, is with my Fluke, I'm able to take a picture of the cable test and show him, what was bad. And the other office was a company that we took over, and they had a jack that they were trying to hook up their time clock into. Now, mind you, they had actually been there 3 months, and the time clock didn't work for all 3 months. But when we came in to set up our equipment, because we moved them over to, our network, our sonic wall, new switch, move their workstations over, all of a sudden it became our responsibility to make sure that this worked. So when I put the, I should probably find a way to show you this picture, but when I did my test, literally all 8 cables were connected improperly. Just a complete, both greens were crossed over to the oranges, both blues were crossed over to the browns. And I'm assuming that they got a 10 meg connection and probably said, oh, that'll work.
Did they even get that? So they got that at least.
I don't know what they got, but all I know is that when I put my testers on, they test the full connection and just say fail.
A lot of these electricians, they don't test their cables, and I guess they're not certifying cables, but my preference is I tell them, look, how the electrician run the cables, we will terminate them if we don't run them. We run a lot of cables, but I'd rather, because it happens so often that they're wrong.
It does, yeah. I used to do that, but I got to the point where I have two different cable companies that I use. When I, you know, if a customer calls me and says, hey, we need cables, I have my people I call, and one's expensive, but that's because they have, you know, expensive testers. They will truly certify a cable. And then I have a kind of a less expensive guy who, he's got a decent tester, but that's because I showed him where to get a good tester, because he did have one of those, you know, one of those, I mean, they're as low as $10 now on Amazon, you know, the ones that will tell you, you know, the four blinking lights and they're either green or red. And that's what he used to use. And I said, that's not good enough.
But it's better than nothing, I guess, because if all of them failed. Now, you know, one time we had a job to run, I don't know, like a couple hundred runs, and we had a lot of them fail, but of course we knew about it, right? We tested it.
Right.
It actually turned out being a huge batch of bad Keystone jacks.
Mm.
We had to pretty much throw away everything we did, pull them off, and order all new Keystones. They were all bad. Even you punched them down, and they were right because, you know, you can look at it, but they would all test open. I don't know why that batch of Keystones were bad, but a lot of them, we ordered another couple hundred from another vendor, and they were all fine. And we've ordered some from this vendor before and after, and they were fine.
Right.
So I really don't know. And they were all blue because the client wanted blue. I want blue. All the blue ones were bad.
Sky blue.
And we said, look, we can order more blue and hope that they're going to be good, or we can just get another color. I think I forgot what we did, but the original blues were all bad.
Hmm. Yeah, that's another thing. If you have to subcontract out your cable guys, make sure that they're cable guys that, you know, don't just order the cheapest that they can find, because a lot of those jacks, you know, they're not Keystone, they're not Panduit, you know, they might just be some off brand, and you know, they're saving a buck a jack
or pennies a jack. They get a pack of 1,000 for $6.
Yeah, something ain't right there. But it's not free, so.
So, I wanted to ask you, we have time for this. Yeah, we got a little time. It was brought up another show that people are still using roaming profiles.
Yes, they are.
What is your thought on roaming profiles? And I'll let you go first.
So, if you're just asking about my thought of roaming profiles, it's, I don't like them. If you want me to explain why, basically, and I think I know where you're going to go with this, because it's hopefully where I'm going to go, is I like folder redirection better.
Yes, right. Yes.
Because roaming profiles, I mean, it's really a lot of work for roaming profiles, and for, you know, I guess if you're in a smaller client, 5 to 10 with a good server, it's not as bad. But once you get up to 20, 30, 40, that could really draw a lot of bandwidth on your network. But folder redirection, I love. And that's what I use if I do it at all.
Yes. Roaming profiles have so many issues. So many issues. Folder redirection is, one, it's quicker for the user. And really, a user, if it's done right, is not going to even notice if they have roaming profiles or if they have folder redirection. They won't know. Because folder redirection, you can redirect desktop, you can redirect favorites, you can redirect my pictures, you know, you can redirect everything to the server.
Yeah.
So if they log into computer one, their documents are there, their desktop is there. You log into computer two, it's there too. Now, if you wanted to make it seamless, maybe you could do a group policy setting to have the same background. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So the same background is everywhere. You can do group policy display settings to look the same. The problem I have with roaming profiles, and this is what happened to us a lot on roaming profiles. Now, roaming profiles were great, right, in 03, server 03?
Yes.
It was like, oh, great, this is so great. But I never liked them from the start, and here's why. We had a lot of people log on to computer one, okay, stay logged on. They go log on to computer two. They might, because it's roaming, right? I can roam from here to there, to and fro, right? They make changes on computer one. They make changes on computer two. You log off computer two, your profile is written back to the server. You log off computer one, your changes are written back to the server. Guess we just lost changes on computer two because computer one overrode
it.
We saw that a lot.
Well, especially in offices where you're correct. People log into multiple stations, leave them open, and think that, you know, they think it's like, you know, active sync where every change gets recorded, which it doesn't.
No. That's more folder redirection. If I'm on computer one and computer two, I save something on my desktop. You know what? It's going to be on the desktop on computer two because I'm redirecting it to the server.
Yep.
Folder redirection is easy to set up in group policy when you're setting up a server. One thing I'll say, though, is make sure that you don't select the option to have the user have exclusive permissions to it. I uncheck that because even the administrator can't get into it.
Right.
So just uncheck that. And you can still have security on it, right, for the user, but you don't want the exclusive permission option because that just really locks everyone out, even administrator, which makes restores hard because you're doing restore as administrator. And I've had problems where I actually had to make a user account, an admin on the backup server, log into the backup server as a user to be able to restore a folder for the user because the admin didn't have access to it. Anyway, folder redirection is what I much prefer over roaming profiles. The roaming profiles just give me the heebie-jeebies.
And as you said, you can pretty much do everything with folder redirection that you want to accomplish in the roaming profiles, even to the point where you can do certain app data folders if you've got to do those.
Oh, yeah.
But you're right, desktop, even the start menu, documents, I mean.
Yep, all of it. I forgot what I was going to say, but roaming profiles, don't do them. Now, some people might not know. You know, some people will say, I'm doing roaming profiles when they're doing folder redirection.
Correct. Yeah, the users don't know the difference.
The users don't know. Now, normally an admin will know the difference because you set up roaming profile in the user profile, right, on the server, or the user account settings, that roaming profile tab, which don't use that. You also shouldn't use the login script tab there either. Use group policy. But, So admins will not tell, but end users won't tell if it's done right. So anyway, I just wanted to, I know the other show was talking about roaming profiles, and they say, yes, we use roaming profiles, but, and maybe they meant folder redirection because they accomplish the same thing, basically, but they're different. It's just terminology, and I don't know what they meant, but when you're setting this up, highly recommend folder redirection.
Yes.
Bad, bad, bad roaming profiles.
Bad network admin. Bad, bad network admin.
And I'm sure there's probably some good use case for roaming profiles. I have never run across it in the type of clients that I support. And maybe somebody out there will say why roaming profiles is better than folder redirection. I would love to hear about that. I've never seen a case for it. I found folder redirection works much better. So if you do like folder roaming profiles more, send us an email, podnutspro@podnuts.com. I would love to hear it.
Yeah, I think that would be good. I'll be honest, I only use folder redirection. And it's been so long since I've used roaming profiles that I don't even remember why.
Why? Because it was a new thing. It was a cool new feature in SBS 03 and probably... I remember using it the first time in SBS 03.
Yeah. So on the, you mentioned the fact that a lot of times people don't know the difference. And folks, if you're going to be working with servers, working with group policy, please learn the difference. Could be saving yourself a lot of headache, a lot of bandwidth traffic with roaming profiles and the such. But that brings us up to... This might be a good time to go to the email portion of the show.
I think so.
Because
stack of emails.
We have
a stack of emails.
Yep, one stack of email. And the plural of email is email. So, So here's the thing. And the reason I think this is a good point is because we talked about confusing terminology. And we had a person write in, although they didn't write to us, they wrote to somebody else who forwarded it to us. And we won't say their name to protect the innocent or the guilty. Guilty until proven innocent. But basically the email says, "I can't believe I'm writing this, but I have just started listening to the Podnuts Pro podcast, and they are doing something that is driving me out of my mind. I had to contact you, gents, because one of the team keeps calling the WatchGuard Firewall Unified Threat Appliance a router. Well, of course, yes, it does routing, but it is not a router. For some reason, every time he does this, I want to scream at the radio."
So, I will agree and disagree with the email. So, WatchGuard, and I'm not sure which one of us says this. I usually refer to the WatchGuard as a WatchGuard. I don't know if I put router behind it. I just call it the WatchGuard.
Well, it's got to be you or the other M, because I say SonicWall. Right. Although I could probably say router too. So, but since he said WatchGuard, that's not me.
Okay. So let's just say it was me. I don't really care who said it. As WatchGuard calls them WatchGuard appliances. So that's what WatchGuard calls them, an appliance. And the Unified Threat Management is software that runs on the appliance. Now, let's say you don't have Unified Threat Management or even a web blocker subscription or any features, any services on the WatchGuard, then it's just a router, right?
Yeah.
Because all it's doing is routing if you don't have any subscription services enabled. So, and secondly, I might refer to it as a router for ease of discussion, especially with a client. They know the term router, right? Just like when they call a computer a modem, I know what they mean.
Or a CPU or a hard drive.
Right. I know what they mean. But technically, yes, it should be called a WatchGuard appliance. I agree with that. Technically. Just like he says he wants to scream at the radio, I know what he means because we're not on the radio, right? I don't think we're on the radio station.
No, because then there would be commercials and a nice DJ voice in the background. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Podcast Network.
So it is a WatchGuard appliance, and it does run Unified Threat Management and other security services. I will agree. I usually just call it a WatchGuard, but it at the base, it is a router. It just also has security services that it does as well. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, if we want to be technical about it, we can, but I think this, along with a lot of other issues in IT, things get called the wrong things all the time. I think I mentioned it earlier where the customer said the internet's broke, and really basically their patch cable fell out of the phone. So they lost connection to their network, which lost connection to the internet, but the internet wasn't broke. But that's what customers do. And we as techs, I can say this, I know a lot of techs that really try to get technical with everything. And, you know, it used to be that, you know, we as geeks always tried to say stuff to show how smart we were, but I don't think that's the case anymore. But I think we do use a lot of terms where people will say my internet's broke when it's really their wireless connection that's broke. Or like we mentioned earlier, they, you know, people ask you, you know, if you got to bring in your, you know, your box, and they say, well, do I bring the whole CPU or the hard drive?
Bring the whole computer.
So
you only just bring me components.
You know, we do it with, you know, patch cables, and somebody says it's, you know, hey, I need an RJ45. You know, is that a Cat5, Cat6, or, you know, laptop versus notebook? We have all of these things, and I think we just have to. Yes, technically, you know, if we want to try to be correct about everything, it'd be nice. But I think, as you said, for ease of use for our clients. And even other technicians, there are technicians who will call a modem a router, or will call a hub a switch, or will call a router a switch, or will call a, you know, Unified Threat Management appliance a VPN router. So,
if I say a WatchGuard, and one reason I say just a WatchGuard normally It's because if I say a WatchGuard appliance to a client, they're going to say, what is it, like a stove or a toaster oven? When they hear appliance, they think some kind of kitchen.
Some stainless steel appliance in their kitchen, right.
So I normally don't use the phrase appliance with a client. I normally will try and say just a WatchGuard. But I will say, Jeff, I'm glad you listened to the show, and I'm glad you emailed. And I will try, if it was me, I will try and refer to it only as WatchGuard. And I will hopefully not add the other R word to the end of that. Yeah. I will just call it WatchGuard.
No more. So no R words. So I'll use the S word, Sonic Wall. You'll use the W word.
Right. And I'll try not to use the... I'll try to add a word behind WatchGuard. Because we don't want to aggravate anybody intentionally.
Just don't use the...
And that way he won't scream at the radio.
Right. But the L word, we don't use either. Linksys.
That's a router. On those things, we need to make sure we say router. Behind
yes. Them. Okay. Just checking to see if we had anything else pop up. All right. So that ends our stack of emails section of the show. And
if anybody else wants to contribute to our stack of email, podnutspro@podnuts.com. Even if it's to complain about us.
No.
We like those emails too. That means you're listening.
No, I think he's reporting a discrepancy.
Oh, God. See, as much as I try, I sometimes use the C word.
Oh.
It's reporting. You're right. Thank you. Reporting.
I think I'm going to encourage more reporting. Report both the good and the bad.
Right.
Both the conservative and the liberal.
We want
the black and the white.
Sounds good. any more contrasting adjectives?
Well, I was going to say the head of hair and the bald, but if people saw...
Which one of us has a head of hair?
I've got... So the problem is it's so shiny, but people don't see my hair. I have hair.
Oh. I have hair. It's just... Very, very short.
Okay, see, same as me. So neither of us...
But I keep it short. I keep it short on purpose. Although I probably will shave it tonight again. One thing I want to mention before we end off, I want to mention MSP World again. I'm going to MSP World 2017 in New Orleans in March, end of March. If anybody is going to that, unless you want to avoid me for some reason, let me know. Matt@podnuts.com. Because I really don't know anybody who's going. The other two M's aren't going.
So. Yeah, but I have a good reason, because I'm actually attending another conference, which is the ABA Tech Show in Chicago. And
I don't know if that's a good reason. It might be a reason.
I'm just saying it's a reason. Listen, it's good enough for me to not be home on my birthday. So
Wait. That's not the same time as MSP World. That's in the summer, right?
Yeah, but the AB Tech Show costs a lot of money. So I
just make your clients pay for that.
I wish I could. So I've got that conference, and I also have, well, we don't know the exact dates, but the Unconvention 2017 will be in the summer. There's a Datto convention that's I think when is MSP World?
March 26th. To the 28th, I think it starts like at noon on the 26th.
I mean, did you say March?
I did say March.
Well, then that's not the summer. The ABA Tech Show's in...
No, I didn't say summer. I thought you said ABAT was summer.
No, it's March 15th through the 18th.
Oh, okay.
I can't miss the whole month of March. I gotta be in Florida for part of that.
It's only 2 days for MSP World. It's not the whole month.
I gotta go a day before, stay a day after, I gotta hang out with people.
All right.
Bye.
Well, again, so it's if anybody's going, let me know. It should be a good conference. I'm looking forward to it, even though I don't know anybody there yet.
Yet. You'll meet some people.
It's New Orleans. It's March. It won't be that hot in March. It's not like it's going to be in August, where it'd be 120 degrees with 100% humidity.
And DattoCon is June 5th through 7th in Denver, Colorado.
Oh. I won't go to that, but I would like to go to that. But I mean, you're going to
that? I'm trying to go to that as well. I got a busy schedule this year.
I would like to go to the Unconvention. We'll have to see when specifics come out. We'll have to see about it. But I would like to go to the...
I think...
If it's in the United States.
Well...
Nothing against Canada. I like Canada. And you know, maybe I'll go even if it is in Canada. But the United States is a little bit easier. I mean, I have a passport. I could go to Canada, but...
Well, as soon as we have the next planning committee, we should have some details for you soon.
And we'll share that with everybody.
We will. We will. All right. So I think this is a good time to end off. And we'd like to thank everyone for subscribing and listening to the show. And Martin, we miss you. And hope that your clients give you a little bit of a break. So, Matt, any last words?
That sounds so morbid. No, I'll just say, shoot us some emails, questions, comments, podnotespro@podnotes.com.
All right. And our quote from our favorite forefather, it takes many good deeds to build a good reputation and only bad, but it do what it do.
Right, take two.
Let me start that over. And we will not clean that up in editing. So, it takes many good deeds to build a good reputation and only one bad one to lose it. So, there you go, folks. With that, we will bid you all good night, farewell, thank you for listening, and we will see you next time on Podnuts Pro.
Hi, this is Matt, the host of the MRP Tech Podcast. I'd like to invite you to listen to all the great shows on the Podnuts Tech Podcast Network. My show is themed Everyday Tech for Everyday People. You can take a listen over at podnuts.com or by subscribing to the RSS feed and downloading them directly. We hope you're enjoying all the great content here on the network, and as always, thanks so much for listening.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.